I'm Jerry McGreer.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is Days of Future Cast, the podcast where Gary and I talk about all things X-Men. And we are talking about X-Men 97 still. And I'm so excited because we have gotten to arguably the best episode of the season.
It's my favorite episode of the season. I think it's the best one. And I think after this, it all is kind of one story. I guess starting with this, I was going to say it's the last episode that is almost its own thing, because in the run up in the end, it's really just kind of one big story, even before the three part finale. But this is perfect. You know, this is the episode I think that most does things that the old show could never do.
Okay. Interesting.
You know, this is more serious and more, you know, has a bigger impact and is more emotional and kind of smarter than anything I think the old X-Men animated series could do.
Okay. So this
feels very modern.
Almost from a who's your target audience kind of standpoint. It's what you're talking about. Like knowing that, like, you know, there's going to be a bunch of adults watching this, not just kids. And responding to that. It's been interesting. So I know a few people who, have kids, like, you know, probably like the 7 to 12, I don't know kids' ages, like 7 to 12 age group or whatever. They watched the series with their kids, and like their kids are all into this shit, like dressing up for as Rogue for Halloween, like going all out, going crazy. And it just makes me so excited that like a show like this that's very like mature, right? Like there's some mature themes happening here, like with love and with death and with, you know, like revenge and all this stuff and sacrifice, like very mature themes happening are still like inspiring kids to get into the X-Men. Like it makes me so happy. It feels like the same stuff that got me into the X-Men, and it just like,
yeah,
I got like genuinely, obviously there's a lot of emotional stuff in this episode, but I got like, again, genuinely emotional watching this again today for the second time.
When I say it's more advanced in terms of its audience, that says more about what TV was like in the 90s than it does the audience.
Yeah.
You know, like kids could handle this, but a kid's show wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
I feel like in the 90s, you know, you get a little closer with like Batman, the animated series, but even then, like, this is very intense.
Yeah. We killed a bunch of mutants this episode. Like a lot of people died.
Important ones.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and in addition to just you know, named characters, but also it being a genocide.
Yes. Like, and that's like, I can't imagine trying to explain that to a kid, right? Like, we did
a genocide someday.
They did a genocide. So now let's talk about, you know, Israel. Like,
did you want a side? Well, it all begins with the Gaza Strip. Like, yeah, it'd be very difficult. That it's also, I think this episode just has incredible action and kinesthetics and beats to it. It's like really well paced,
and it's got the melodrama too. Like it's got that undercurrent of angst and drama that I love about the X-Men just as much as I love all of the action and the shooting and the back and forth.
Yeah, it's just really, really good.
And we'll talk about it obviously as we go through the episode, but just cool use of powers. I think that's one of my favorite things about the X-Men. I hammer about that on the podcast all the time, but like when they use their powers in unexpected ways, it's always super fun to me. So
it's a cool part of the fantasy.
Yes.
You know, like if you were a kid who grew up with superheroes like us and you fantasize about having powers, that is such a cool thing to see displayed.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like different ways to use it are the kind of shit I would talk about on playgrounds and stuff. And then just actually seeing it embodied is really fun.
Yes. So to get us into it, we're going to be talking about season 1, episode 5, Remember It. This was directed by Emi Yonemura, written by Bo DiMaio, Maria Wilson, Stan Lee. As Genosha,
I don't think Stan Lee actually wrote it. No, I think it's just based on concepts that Stan Lee had farted around.
Thank you. Just copying stuff from IMDb sometimes. You know, they. As Genosha prepares to join the UN, select members of the team head to the island nation to be honorees. Back at the mansion, a behind-the-scenes press event risk airing the X-Men's dirty laundry. Noticed a couple of new things in the intro. We get Cable fighting Apocalypse. We have the classic scene of Storm fighting Calypso and gaining control of the Morlocks. And then there's kind of a cool scene with Gambit and Nightcrawler kind of back-to-back killing some robots. I don't even know what they were doing. Like, they were just back-to-back fighting. I don't know, even know what they were doing.
It was cool. It was interesting to see that last bit, because one of the things it made me think about is that, like, I have not seen Gambit and Nightcrawler interact very much in the comics. And they have similar fighting styles. Like, it seems like they would go together really well in that way, but they don't, they're actually not super close friends.
Yeah.
in the comics. Like, everyone's friends with Nightcrawler, but you know, there aren't a lot of like Gambit Nightcrawler stories.
Yeah.
I know of.
It'd be interesting to see those two together a lot more, I think.
Yeah.
But I liked the Cable and Apocalypse stuff. It's nice seeing Apocalypse because spoiler alert, he's not going to show up anytime soon in this season. So
they're always reminding you of stuff in these things, you know, and Storm fighting Calypso, we're going to get Calypso in this.
Yeah.
You know, we had to get that history of them. So we start out with Trish Tilby interviewing Beast at the X-Mansion.
Lots of flirtation going on. Trish is a monster lover. We love her.
Yeah, she is a Beast girlfriend sometimes in the comic.
Yes. They're basically doing like the, I am so happy, honored that you were here, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
As he's kind of being, you know, the ambassador of the X-Men, being kind of the, for lack of a better word, most professional in the whole group. Jubilee gets to sit down and she's just excited to talk about all the stuff that they do, including vampire dinosaurs, which nobody understands, which is very
cute. In the danger room, like all the practical training. Yeah. And they show Scott is upset. You know, they're talking about training. This is a human interest story, you know, news report kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, it's a good day though. Genosha is being inducted into the UN, a big deal. And we show Magneto, Rogue and Gambit flying on their way there. And when they get there, as they approach, they're blown away. They've remodeled the place since then. And everything is real good in Genosha now. And the degree to which I hoot and holler over cameos in the show.
Oh, I know, man. It's so good.
It's sort of undignified of me. Like, I'm just like, yes, you know, fucking A. It's Gargwheel. That weird one-off New Mutant.
They show Glob so much in this, and you just love Glob. Like, I love Glob so much, man.
One of the all-time greatest designs of a comic book character ever.
Ever.
Not just an X-Man, you know, ever, anyone. But you get Glob, you get Pixie, you're getting everybody here. Nature Girl is in there. All kinds of pretty, like, obscure pots.
Yeah.
And then Leech, who's in there, which is very funny because Leech does a very specific thing.
Yes.
It's in his name. He doesn't do it anymore.
Which is fine. We don't care. As long as Leech is off
camera.
Yeah.
Well, the funniest thing is there's also Leech has a little buddy named Artie.
Yes.
Who doesn't drain people's powers, who's functionally the same as Leech. They could have just thrown Artie in there, but they throw Leech in there.
Everybody wants to see Leech. And this is a big montage of just like how great it is to live in Genosha, right? Like there's street vendors. Like this looks like King's Landing on a good day when there's not seven kings vying for the Iron Throne. Like this is just a happy day in King's Landing.
There's African music that's played. And at first I was like, oh, that's kind of a weird bit, but then I always forget, like, Genosha is off the coast of Africa.
Yeah.
Genosha is an African nation,
so it's okay.
I mean, it's not an African culture. I don't know why they, I was like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. If I had to choose Genoshian music, what would I choose? You know, you invent a new kind of music. Later they do it, they just choose Ace of Base.
Yes. I have a lot to say about the Ace of Base song that they sing on this, by the way.
This guy's a fucking Nazi.
It's
a weird choice that they chose Ace of Base.
It's like, just to get out of the way, it's apparently was written because like to actually take a stand against his neo-Nazism.
Okay.
So because when it came out at first, people were like, yeah, this dude is such and such. He has a background of this. But if you actually look into it, like that dude like rejected all of that stuff. And this was part of that. So it's not quite as bad as I thought it was when I first watched the episode. And I was like, this is a weird fucking choice. For a
weird poll.
Yeah. Like, why are we singing like basically like Nazis are great during this scene? This is really fucking weird.
It doesn't make it not a weird song, though, for the mutant. Like, we're going to have our own culture and music that's going to look toward the future and choosing like a 90s Ace of Base song.
Yeah, if we're going to choose an Ace of Base song, like All That She Wants Is Another Baby, I think would be more appropriate.
make that dance scene with Rogue and Magneto real weird.
Yeah, and Madeline and Cable, come on. All That She Wants.
Brutal burn to Cable.
I'm just saying there's better Ace of Base songs that we could have chosen.
There are a lot better Ace of Base songs.
So yeah, we see how great Genosha is, and then Madeline Pryor is there to greet them. This is where she has taken up residence after she left the X-Mansion, trying to kind of figure out her own destiny in life. Since
everybody's in a good mood.
You know, everyone's like, happy.
They want an X. It's great. Everyone's, you know, they want an extra. They want an X-Man. It turns out you guys had a spare gene. You know, like she's happy about it. Like, and Magneto gets pulled aside by Val Cooper. You know, and Gambit and Rogue are like, what are we going to do? And then Nightcrawler pops up.
Nightcrawler is just like just teleporting everywhere. And I think the important thing, I think sometimes the comics, or not the comics, but this show specifically forgets that it, like, every time he teleports, it causes like the scent of rotten eggs, basically. Like, that dude's just farting everywhere. Like,
it's a nonstop fart fest. And later in the show, they actually show how unpleasant it is to be teleported by Nightcrawler.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And he's just doing it willy nilly to Gambit and Rogue. Like,
they're used to it. They're absolutely used to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is
really charming.
Yeah, he's going to take him for a tour of the city, right? Like, let's go check out Genosha together. Like, this is a fun time.
They're old friends. They allude to the first episode that, you know, his highlight episode in the old series, but the implication is they hung out after that as well. We just didn't see it.
Absolutely. And he credits the X-Men for, like, allowing this to happen, right? Like, the X-Men freed Genosha from this, and, like, it was built into this. And Gambit's in a bad mood, mostly because Magneto and Rogue are kind of boning down. So yeah, he's not real happy about anything. So he's like, these apple prizes too high, share.
That was interesting. The first time I watched it, you know, because it's Genosha, my first thought, I didn't expect them to do E is for Extinction, like, in a million years. So I thought there would just be a dark secret to Genosha. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, like, maybe these people are actually being exploited. Like, it's a $10 apple. The reason is they're not trading with other countries yet. You know, like, when a country is new, like, it's expensive and everything. But I was like, okay, this is going to be a story where Gambit's the only one who realizes something's wrong.
Exactly.
But they're on a different level than that. Like, that's what the old show would do, you know? He's upset that there are statues of Magneto everywhere.
Yes.
You know, and there's signage everywhere. Magneto is right.
There's a very brief dance routine with Jamie Madrox, Azazel, and Dazzler, which is my dream Blunt lineup. I guess if we're gonna talk about Blunt lineups, that'd be a pretty good one, I think.
I love Dazzler being here.
I do too.
And there's so many little cameos in this too. Like, Boom Boom shows up, like, doesn't get a speaking line or anything, but just like, if you recognize him, you recognize him. Squid Boy.
Yep.
Or like something there. Like that. Mm-hmm. And a Squid Boy. Pretty fun.
Yeah. Lots of rewatch material, right? Like, lots of like stuff in the sidelines that you can pick up on.
Obscure stuff too. Like, it is cool to see newer characters.
Yeah.
You know, show up in here, like Nature Girl, which I think is like from 2018 in the comics or something. Like, a relatively late character is there.
But still there, right? Like, still doing X-Men shit. Like, still doing it, still around, which is very, very cool. Nightcrawler pulls Gambit to the side and is basically like, hey, I can tell you're sad. You should just marry Rogue.
Like, everyone can tell you guys have this connection.
Yeah.
You know, I really like the scene. The Nightcrawler voice actor is the same one from the old series, mm-hmm. which they didn't have to do, but it's a nice touch. And Gambit's like, no, you know, people like me, I'd be too busy sinning to get married. And I love this. Nightcrawler goes, there is no love without sin, because love is measured in how much you can forgive.
Yeah.
I like that line a lot. And it seems to like work on Gambit. Gambit's like, huh, you know,
he really thinks like, about it.
Chewing on that. Yeah. That is a nice line.
We go back to the mansion where Tish Tilby is now interviewing Cyclops. And there's kind of this awkward moment. I love this, like, almost like office, like faux documentary style thing that they do where you can hear the crew being like, hey, can you take the shades off? It's causing, he's like, I absolutely cannot take the shades off.
And then they hard cut to a room with different lighting.
Exactly. Yeah. Just very, very good. Very like good, very good background. Like, people, I think with The Office and like 30 Rock and, Parks and Rec and all the faux documentaries that have been, like, people are so used to that format that just like referencing that is really easy and it's really good.
Yeah.
But Cyclops starts talking about Jean, and then as we talk about Jean, we switch over to Jean, who is like in the middle of a pond doing her best Moses impression, and like, I don't, is she like, she's holding these globs of water that have like images in them, and I guess they're supposed to represent her memories, right?
This is confusing. I think I don't like the blocking in this. The color of the water looks weird to me too.
Yeah,
I'm blind, so don't. You know, don't listen to me, but to me it looked like toxic waste. For some reason it looked like greenish or sludgy.
It looked a lot greener than I would expect a lake to look, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And you know, Wolverine walks up to her. You know, she's talking about, you know, she's here with her memories and everything. Like, I don't remember everything. I just, you know, and what I do remember, I don't necessarily trust. And we do this really beautiful scene where Trish Tilby says, how did you know, you're the power couple of the X-Men, Cyclops and Jean. When did you know? And they talk about a specific moment that's from the comics, which is when she was first becoming the Phoenix, she wanted to anchor herself to him. She talks about, like, the universe was calling her and stuff. She needed to feel earthly. And they go back and forth, Cyclops talking about it as well, where she takes off his visor and she can just hold his powers back, and they look in each other's eyes for the first time.
Yes.
You know, and this is like a very beautiful moment. I love when this is referenced. I think this is, that's a moment in the X-Men that stuck with me my whole life.
Same.
Weird little call out thing in Phoenix End Song, which is not a great
miniseries. Not a good comic book.
Yeah, not a great comic. There's a great moment in it, though, where Emma Frost tries to duplicate this moment with Scott. She's in like a little thing and she just diamonds up so he can't hurt her.
Yes.
And tries to do the same thing, but the beams just reflect off and make a big, huge mess in there. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it's not beautiful and sweet. It's really messy. And like, and I was like, oh man, that is a good, you know, that's some good subtext for Cyclops and Emma Frost relationship.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I was reading it, like comparing like him and Jean are like universally perfect, you know, and Wolverine's going to say that something to that effect pretty soon. Whereas him and Emma was messier. Like I like Cyclops and Emma a lot. I like that relationship.
Especially that period messier. Of Cyclops and Emma, yes. Right? Like that. I mean, they eventually get to a little bit more of a stable ground in their relationship, but like at the beginning, it is very messy.
You know, like, and her trying to emulate, you know, do this thing that Jean Grey did that was so beautiful for the relationship, and it just not working.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's effectively the same, but it's not, I really like it.
And the cut back really, and really forth, good. I think is really interesting too, because Jean is talking about holding back her immense level of power. And Cyclops is talking about allowing her to hold back his immense amount of power, right? Like it's a special moment for both of them for similar reasons, but also different reasons. But it's mainly focused on Jean and not Cyclops, which I think is kind of interesting, especially with all of the stuff we're going to get with Madeline and Cyclops here in just a little while. Wolverine is there, and he's kind of, his advice to all of this stuff was, as Jean is talking about these memories, is, hey, I've got, you know, a head full of bad memories. I would look forward, not back.
Yeah, you'll drown in them.
Yeah.
You know?
And Jean leans over and kisses him. Which is, you know, I think a kind of a major deal for Wolverine, major deal for anybody who is into Logan and Jean. But he pulls back and is like, hey, you know, you're with the Boy Scout. Like, you should remember that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not.
He said, you know, you're Jean Grey, he's Scott Summers, those are the rules, and you just forgot for a moment. You know,
and,
like,
and he walks away. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good line. Tish then kind of ruins this whole, you know, Cyclops is fondly thinking about his wife and asks about Nathan. Basically reminds him like, oh yeah, that's not the person you had a baby with, you know. He denies it, and she's like, oh yeah, well, there were records, you know, of this. You know, I saw birth records for it. You know, there's testimony from the doctor. Why are you lying? And Cyclops gets really mad.
Yes.
You know, he snaps, and this is also really good.
I love this, you know, because I mean, it's like Cyclops in the comics obviously has so many anger issues that we've dealt with throughout the years. But I mean, he's regarded as so much of like a Boy Scout. Like Wolverine just called him a Boy Scout like 2 seconds ago. But he has all of these anger issues. He has all of this repression. And like this woman bringing up his baby who he just lost, and while he's carrying on the carrying, you know, the weight of losing his mentor/father figure, the way that his team is now being controlled by a fucking terrorist that he's been fighting since he was 16, the fact that his wife was not really his wife but a clone, and that's really confusing. Like all of this stuff is on top of him. So when she starts asking these like real specific questions, he just blows up. He just can't help himself. And really, like it's fascinating because like the words that he's using, like, you know, I have to lie because you're normal, because you're ungrateful, because I have to answer your questions to prove that I'm even a person. Like otherwise you would even think that I exist. And it, you know, I think we talk a lot. I think a lot of people talk about the metaphor for X-Men as, you know, heterosexual people. And a lot of times it really, really doesn't work. But this time, like with this kind of language, it really, really works. Right. Like it's just exactly like you're making me prove that I'm a fucking person. Like I shouldn't have to tell you this stuff. I'm just a person.
Yeah.
And it works really, really well.
And they extend it, you know, cause the X-Men are superheroes as well, where they tie it in and he's like, you know, thank God we're not like you, because if we were, you'd be fucked.
Yes.
Like we, you know, save your life all of the time. Like, you know, it's great. He loses his composure, like the most composed X-Men. Like you can see how much pressure he's under this. We come back to Genosha.
I love the council group here. Like, where did we get these guys?
It's a real mixed grill.
Who decided on this council? Like, who voted?
You know, it's very funny. The council is Banshee, you know, and Moira McTaggart, mm-hmm. you know, fine. Madeline Pryor, they wanted an X-Man. Fine. Callisto, okay, leader of the Morlocks,
Get it?
Kinda. Uh-huh. You know? And then Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost, so they have two horrible supervillains.
Yes. Absolutely. In there. Absolutely.
Also, yeah, just like, to be awful.
I love the idea of Madeline as an X-Man, because like even Madeline doesn't know if she was an X-Man for any length of time, right?
Yeah, technically.
Like,
you
know, like she never wore an outfit.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They feel like that's the bare minimum.
She did. We don't know how long she was in jeans.
Well, that's what I'm saying. She doesn't either, though. Like, nobody does.
Yeah, I guess that's true. she may or may not have.
It's just very funny to me. And it's even funnier because they've called Magneto in here, and they basically want him to take over the role as Chancellor, or AKA King. They basically want him to rule Genosha, to be if not necessarily its president, like then its leader, like I said, slash Chancellor slash King. And Magneto is like, you know, I don't like, can't you find anyone better to deal with this like human democratic stuff? And it's like, yeah. And Moira chimes in, and I like this a lot, where she goes, yeah, but Charles is already gone. Like,
yeah,
he entrusted you with his X-Men, so we entrust you with this responsibility of developing our democratic relationships with all of the rest of the nations. Which,
trust me, you are not our first choice.
Yeah, I wanted someone to say that. Like, can you get anybody else? Like, I don't. This literally anybody would be better, I think, at this than Magneto. To be honest with you, but what do I know?
So, you know, Magneto thinks about it. He's like, oh, you know, I remember the first time Charles told me about his dream in a bar in Germany. We're going to see this later in the series, you know, and says, you know, any dream worth having is worth dying for. Like, this is worth doing. And he says he'll do it, but he's on one condition. And then we cut to him talking to Rogue.
Yes.
The condition is Rogue will be his queen. You know, he says, you know, I will be the strong king, and you are somebody who can feel what anyone else feels with a touch. You know, Yes. You'll be an empathetic leader. And he deflects it. She's like, this is ridiculous. And he says, this is Xavier's design.
This is a real weird thing to demand. Like, I will take over your country if I can date the redhead. Is a real weird.
It's a little strange.
It's a little strange, but I get it. Like, he wants like a partner in ruling. Like, and I can understand that. It would just be a thing that like I would have checked with Rogue first about, like, to make sure that she's down, because she's not into this at all. She's kind of pissed about the whole thing, especially like as he continues, he turns this into a confession of love. And says like, you know, something to the extent of loving you leaves broken men whole.
Even if you don't love back, it fixes men.
Yeah. Like, that's a little fucked up. Like, what are we doing? Red flag guy on TikTok. Yeah. What are we doing?
It's the kind of thing Dracula says to Storm. Not usually the kind of thing that Magneto says to Rogue.
It's kind of the thing Dracula says to everybody.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Nosferatu, but I bet that line is in there somewhere.
Yeah. Great night scene. You know, go to the mansion where it looks like we're just after the interview, and it looks like Jean is just comforting Scott.
Yes.
You know, like, hey, everyone gets angry, you know, tell me about Nathan. And he starts talking about Nathan, and they kiss, but it turns out this isn't Jean. This is Madeline Pryor who he's talking to, and Jean busts in on him. This is, again, the same thing that happens in Grant Morrison's X-Men with Emma Frost here. I love how it's playing the fact that they're clones against us.
Yes.
You know, like, we think it's Jean for a minute, but it's not.
It's fascinating too, like this idea of their special psychic rapport that Jean talked about during she wasn't being interviewed, but she was telling Wolverine about, right? Like, this the special like connection that they've always had since they were teenagers, and seeing him share that with a different woman that's not her is if not literal cheating, it's emotional cheating, right? Like, it's sharing that with somebody else, and she does it without telling her about it. And it hurts her. It hurts her feelings.
Super. I have a lot of sympathy for Scott here. It's a clone, and he had a baby with her, and he doesn't know when they switched.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a fucked up situation all the way around.
Super fucked up. Yeah. Like, I understand why Jean's upset. I also understand Scott's side during this, which is a good, you know, makes it a good argument, and so much better than the comics version of this, where like Jean Grey just disappeared and he just met a clone, didn't question it, and married her immediately.
Yes.
You know, and it was real stupid. Here, it's like, this is real fresh.
Yeah.
You know, I don't expect Scott to get over this right away.
And like, you know, the idea of having like this second psychic rapport, like, especially if him and I guess we'll call her actual Jean, like Jean at the mansion, have not had that connection since this happened, and him and Madeline have. Like, it lays more proof that, like, she was there longer than they ever expected. So, like, this was the person that he was in love with, as opposed to this the real quote-unquote Jean.
He thought it was her. He didn't do anything wrong. It's a fucking clone.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very messy situation. It's really tough.
It's very difficult to navigate. I would imagine, like most poly relationships are, without cloning.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah. You know, she says, you know, I turned my back on galaxies for you.
Yes.
You know, and now Sinister just cut out a small part of me and you love it. You know, you know, and he's like, no, I love both of them. And Cyclops turns it back and says, do you actually love me or do you just remember loving me? You know, or is this just a memory? Like, you've been cold too. This is a great couple's fight. Like, this feels very well realized. Gets interrupted when Jean gets kind of zapped. She gets some psychic feedback. We're gonna see what this is,
And we're gonna switch back to Genosha, where we have kind of another breakup, almost
like this is great
relationship conversation, where Rogue is preparing to tell Gambit kind of the truth about her and Magneto, and we actually see the history where her mom was training her how to use her powers, and brought her to Magneto for like further training, just like people would bring kids to Xavier. Except Magneto being what looks like 45 and Rogue being what looks like 17 years old, kind of develop a romantic relationship during this, which is a little sketchy, but whatever. It's a cartoon. We can get over it.
Little Easter egg here. The outfit she's in is like a Rogue Savage Land
stuff. Yeah.
That's very famous, even though she was only in it for like one issue in the comic, but they're like doing a miniseries. Of her in the Savage
they did
Land,
that one
on
cover the, and I think that like a trading card, and people were like, let's get it. We need more
popular image. Here's the story we're gonna tell from this.
But he kind of taught her not necessarily just how to use her powers, but also like how being a mutant can be art and can be a culture and can be an identity, which is, I think, kind of fascinating that we get this brief history on this, because we don't see this side of Magneto a whole lot. A lot of the stuff we see with Magneto is, you know, we have to kill all the humans, or we have to do this in order to, we have to, you know, take over this island or whatever.
Yeah, he's always reactive.
Exactly.
You know, we haven't seen doesn't go into Krakoa era stuff. You can tell in part because Moira MacTaggert is Moira MacTaggert in this, but the idea of this version of Genosha with the culture and everything is a Krakoa era thing. Like, what are mutants like when they're no longer reactive and on the defensive?
When they're no longer persecuted, right? Like, what is possible if we're not on the defense all the time?
Yeah. Real cool they told that story for a couple of years, and real uncool they just stuffed it back into a fucking sack.
Fucking Marvel, man. I swear to God.
We'll always have the memories of it.
Yes.
During this whole thing, when she's telling the story, Gambit is just tossing playing cards into a fire.
Yes.
Formal wear Gambit, which I love.
I love a white tux Gambit. This is fucking
white
legit.
Tux Gambit's good.
Yeah.
So she and Magneto broke up because he was too upset, you know, and he acted like nothing ever happened.
This is the point where they explain that his electromagnetic powers allowed her to touch him. So they were able to actually touch one another. So they developed an actual physical relationship. Like she talks about that with him. And she also says like the reason that they kind of split up is because despite him wanting all of this stuff, he was so angry. Like his rage got in the way that she left and they split. And both of them acted like nothing ever happened after that until they, you know, until he took the X-Men back over.
Yeah. Rogue is saying that, you know, not only is this her chance to do the thing she became an X-Man for, but also, you know, Gambit's like, some things are deeper than skin. And she's like, some things aren't.
Yes.
You know, like she wants to be touched during this. And this is where Gambit reveals the immense skill issue that he's never gotten a woman off through her pants. And come on, man. That is fucking teenager shit. If you cannot do that, I don't know what to tell you, Remy.
I mean, like a fucking cooking glove. Like, I mean, like
any number of things.
Yeah, yeah. Just get those black gloves and all those barbecue fuckers on Reels and TikTok. You know what I'm saying? Let me get my black gloves on.
Fingering gloves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to do a little smoking and then we're going to do a little fucking. That's what we're talking about today.
Like literally never gotten off through frittage. Okay. Cool, Gambit. But you know, she says like, so she basically breaks up with him and he's really upset. He's like, we'll just be friends. He takes this very gracefully. here.
I was pleasantly surprised that this was so graceful, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It did not have to be. They could have really made Gambit a very petulant, kind of childish character in this moment of, you know, well, you know, Gambit wants to like do all this stuff, but instead he like kisses the back of her hand and says like, oh, we'll just be friends. And then walks away, like does not want to be in this conversation anymore. But like,
no,
what a mature thing for Gambit to do that I absolutely did not expect whatsoever.
Yeah, it's good Gambit characterization. Yes. Like he's not being played as a clown, yeah, you know, during this whole episode,
which makes sense given like what happens in the rest of this episode.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so. This is his highlight episode. Like everyone gets a highlight episode, you know, during this, and they do the previously on X-Men. They say it, mm-hmm, in the beginning. This is Gambit's.
Meanwhile, Val Cooper is expressing that she's not very happy that Magneto is their chosen kind of leader for Genosha, saying that most nations don't let terrorists be leaders. And Magneto responds saying, yet so many nations let their leaders be terrorists, which is very, very good.
Real good. Gambit and Madeline Pryor at the bar,
yes,
kind of watching this, you know, he's drowning his sorrows. We show fireworks and we see Uatu there, because something big is going to happen.
Yes.
Here. They say, you know, listen, you don't need to worry that much, Val Cooper, because Magneto will rule, but an X-Men is going to join him, Rogue. And then Rogue floats down and everybody loses their mind like it's a John Hughes movie.
This is, you amazing. Know,
the prom girl comes down.
I think this is absolutely fantastic. Like the music kicks in, she floats in like a fucking queen. We don't often see Rogue like this, right? Like she's obviously like has been used as like a sexual bombshell character, but like this feels like something so totally different that we get from Rogue, because she's in this like beautiful gown. She's not in the Savage Land outfit or like a bikini or whatever. Like she's in this.
Well, she has skin showing, not in like a horny way necessarily, but in a way that she wouldn't ordinarily do because it'd be too risky.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but since she's going to be floating above the dance floor with somebody who can touch her, she can do this.
Exactly.
She's like feeling herself.
Mm-hmm. And this is, I think this is amazing. Like everybody is freaking out. This is when the Ace of Base song starts playing. We talked about this a little bit, but yeah, it's Happy Nation starts playing, which is an odd choice. I think it makes sense for Genosha. It just like, if you just have to do a little history dive on it to realize it's okay.
I think it's a weird song musically for this moment. Like, I don't think this is a perfect music choice personally, for this, even with the context around it not there. It's dated and weird. I don't know.
It's I would have almost liked to see, and it, this is difficult, but like the Newton brothers have done such a good job on music throughout this entire season. I would have liked to seen their take on like a ballroom dance techno track like this.
Yeah. Like a Dazzler song.
Yeah.
Or the whole idea is there's mutant culture. Unless like one of the people from Ace of Base was supposed to be a mutant.
just like JFK.
Who can just have another baby after another baby after another baby.
I wouldn't have mind something, but I can also see why they wanted to do something that people recognize. I think like grounding this into a song that most people I think would recognize as a track, and like having that as the background for this, let them do some cool things musically.
Yeah.
So I see the
period appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. It is weird that like this, we're celebrating this mutant nation and they're using like a 20-year-old human song. I do agree. I think it fits personally. I think I like it throughout it. I also had the Ace of Base CD as a kid, so I can't really say
you're a big Ace of Base fan.
Yeah.
The, as you know, everyone's watching, this very beautiful lyrical scene. Madeline gets hit with the same psychic bolt that Jean did and sees a flash of the future with like rats crawling over stuff and everything. Her nose starts to bleed. All this is happening very fast. You know, Rogue breaks the kiss that she has with Magneto and says, you know, I'm actually going to reject this.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to become your queen. Some things are deeper than skin.
And then,
you know,
Madeline goes outside and we see Cable, of all people. Mm-hmm. He's running around. He's trying to get everyone to
stop the music.
I hate Ace of Base.
Stop the music.
This is not a skate party.
Yeah. The main thing is he wants the music. He's not just saying evacuate or like sentinels are coming, which would have probably solved it. It's just stop the music.
Stop the music. Yes.
Stop the music. Stop the music.
He's trying to get everybody away from the party, and he says, you know, he's coming. As he rushes up to Madeline, we hear his suit say like body slide in one, which if we know Cable means he's about to teleport somewhere. And Madeline, looking at Nathan, like recognizes him as Nathan, looks at his eyes and realizes that Cable is her son from the future, realizes he survived as he says, I'm so sorry, Mom. And it's like teleported out.
Yep.
And then just then everything goes to hell. And this episode just goes completely off the fucking rails in a way that just left me like literally agog as I was watching it. I had no idea that this was about to happen.
It's something that I recognized that was from the comics, you know, right away, basically. Like when Cable showed up, I was like, oh shit, they're doing Years for Extinction here. And it's just one of the, my favorite things about X-Men 97 is the way that it incorporates storylines throughout the X-Men into things.
Like without being a slave to them, right? Like that's the,
not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. This
like,
is,
we're going to take our favorite parts and make a cool Frankenstein monster out of this.
That was done by Cassandra Nova, but for our purposes, it needs to be done by Bastion, and it fits.
Yes.
You know, it's really clever. Like it is really well put together. I don't like Bo DeMeo as a guy. It seems like I really hope the show can keep the juice. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how much of it is him and how much, like, he would have you believe it's all him.
Yes.
But I know that creative works don't work that way. You know, they're collaborations. Other people wrote this as well. Other people directed it. I hope that they're able to maintain that angle of this specifically.
Yes.
Very much so.
Because boy, are they? Because they're whipping it on the What If series, my man.
Fucking yes, they're cooking it here at the very least.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. I just some of this What If stuff. Like Autumn was watching it. It's like, what the fuck is? I don't know what any of this is. And I was like, that's Kate Bishop, and she's like, we watched Hawkeye. I don't know who that is. Why is she a cowgirl? I don't understand what's going on at all. Like yeah. why is Shang-Chi a cowboy? I don't get it.
Yeah. So big chaos, huge green lasers and stuff. And we come in kind of the aftermath, like Rogue wakes up under this huge brick, Magneto bursts all of his stuff off and they link up, you know, and there are Sentinels here. There is a gigantic Sentinel. Gambit calls it a big Godzilla Sentinel later. It's a master bolt. It's a three-headed super Sentinel thing.
Yes.
That we've seen. Nightcrawler barely manages to save them. And there's this great bit where it's like, how many? And it's just like too many. You know, everybody, like yes. So many people have died. And throughout this whole scene, we're going to pan over people who we know who are dead.
Yes.
You know, Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost and Moira MacTaggert. We see Banshee get destroyed by a laser. Like all these people who are important characters get killed.
Just devastatingly killed, like unquestionably killed in comic book land, right? Like just
yep.
Vaporized by Sentinel lasers.
One of the funniest things in the world happens though, where they're like, the Morlocks are stuck. And I was like, why didn't you invite the Morlocks to the party?
Dude, like why are the Morlocks? Why did y'all build an underground for the Morlocks? Than just Genosha?
Does it just make them more comfortable? Did they have to live in the Genosha sewers?
Did they ask for this? Like, is this where they wanted to live? I mean, if they did, that's fine. I get it. Like, I totally understand, right? Like
they're institutionalized. It's like, in Shawshank.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
The room's too big.
Yeah, the room's too big. Yeah, they can't they can't handle windows. I get it. But at the same time,
very funny.
Val is watching all of this in horror. We get her reaction. Magneto decides he's going to distract the Sentinels so that Rogue and Gambit can save the Morlock. And this is just fucking incredible. He starts slinging metal rocks at the Master Mold. Gambit jumps on a fucking motorcycle out of nowhere. I don't know where he got that from. Rogue is flying beside him. This is fucking awesome. Everybody's
really good.
Everybody's like, she's holding up metal to like provide cover over his bike. Gambit is like she gets into a fight with a Sentinel, and he, through the rearview mirror, he's looking at his like the love of his life just smashing a Sentinel up, and it's so fucking cool. I love all of this, man. This is just throwing my hands up, loving this so much.
I'm gonna throw this out there. This is my favorite cartoon action.
Yeah.
This show generally, but this scene so far that we've seen is my favorite action I've seen in a cartoon. I think that like, there's definitely some, you know, I'm going to say it, people yell at me. There's some anime influence to some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. It is still grounded enough to where I know where everything is.
Yes.
In here. Mm-hmm. Like this action is cool and over the top, but not so over the top that everyone is just flying and punching each other in midair.
Yeah.
Like it never slips into Dragon Ball bullshit. In this, it just has like a tiny little taste of it where it's over the top because they're superheroes, but it's not over the top like nothing has weight, which is my main problem with action in anime.
Yeah.
This is, in terms of animation fight scenes, this is as good as it gets to me.
So probably in terms of like fighting anime stuff, like, and I haven't watched a whole large amount of anime, but like Attack on Titan is probably my highlight for like the way that they draw like combat. And it's really interesting because like they're on these like they're basically flying around on strings. Like it doesn't make any physics sense whatsoever, but it looks fucking cool. Like that's the important thing. They're fighting these giant monsters, and it's very similar to this. Like this is more grounded than this, but it's also like people combining their efforts in order to take down something so much larger than themselves.
Yeah.
And this looks so fucking cool. I love the moment where like Magneto keeps throwing stuff at this Master Mold, and the Master Mold like knocks him over, and he hits the metaphorical like Xavier statue. Yes. And knocks that over. Really good.
Crushes
moment.
A bunch of people.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like, not good.
It's being on strings is a good way to put it. Like I always want action where people are don't look like they're on strings. Mm-hmm. Just for personal preference. Like nothing more than that. But I never wanted to feel like strings.
Yeah.
You know. At this point, he's really upset. He's knocked over the statue, killed a bunch of people, and he says, no more, this won't happen again. And he starts wielding these subway trains like whips.
Dude, this is so fucking awesome.
It's
man.
So sick. Like he has to swing his arms to like, to beat this thing. It's really good.
Again, talking about like when we talk about the use of powers, right? Like he's not just shooting a magnetic energy beam or anything. Like he picked up a fucking train of subway cars and is like using it to whip up a fucking Sentinel.
Something 100 times his size.
Like, amazing. Yeah. Absolutely. Really good looking.
The Morlocks are trapped and, Tommy is there, they're all scared because they're going to die. And Tommy's like, the X-Men have never been, friends to the Morlocks. Whereas Leech is like, Xavier will help us or Magneto. It's real cute. But who actually comes in but Gambit?
Yes.
Like saves them.
Busts in at the last minute. And as they're leaving the tunnels, Magneto is kind of knocked to the side. And the Master Mold, we hear him say Omega threat detected. And this Sentinel unleashes this huge energy beam right at Magneto. And Leech is sitting right beside him.
Sucking out all his powers.
Sucking all of Magneto's powers out.
Just sucking him off.
But most importantly, knocking Gambit and Rogue out of the way. As Magneto looks at Leech, like he uses his native language to say, do not be afraid in German, which is a real interesting choice because I don't know if Leech knows German or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it.
It also made me think why Magneto and Nightcrawler have never spoken German to each other.
Right?
Like, oh, that's if they would have something of that in common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Sentinel blasts them and it looks like they are just dead. We're not going to find anything out about their outcome for the rest of this episode. But the Sentinel says Omega threat eliminated. And Rogue flies up in rage. And I love this moment because
this is so good.
She doesn't like growl or scream or anything, but like her formal dress is torn. She's obviously like been in battle. And she's just angry. You can tell by the look on her face, she's angry. She doesn't have to vocalize anything. And as she starts to charge into the Master Mold, Gambit charges up the entire fucking motorcycle and slings it at her and knocks her to the side, saving her life.
Honestly. Yeah. So she won't kill herself on the Master Mold.
Yes.
The Master Mold slams down the concrete, creating this like ramp, and Gambit jumps up it with his charged staff. It's super fucking cool.
Oh my God. This is so awesome.
It's really good. Getting right up in his face and he gets stabbed in the gut. He gets stabbed in the side. And he's been, the Master Mold holds him right up in front of his face and says, mutant intruder neutralized, kind of bragging.
And I am like, man, the first time I watched this, I'm like mouth open. Like, just like, there's way they're about to fucking kill Gambit. Like, there's absolutely no way that this is happening in this cartoon. Like, I'm not, they're like, children are crying right now.
Yeah. It's really good. And then, Gambit goes, the name is Gambit, mon ami, remember it. And then uses his body to charge up the Master Mold. Exploding it, causing unknown devastation, putting a huge hole in the middle of the earth.
Yes,
in Africa,
but killing the Master Mold, which is a big accomplishment.
The important part. It's fucking incredible.
And then we switch from here to the TV, where like Tish Tilby is like doing a live report, basically, and the X-Men are watching this from the mansion, and they're all just devastated as we see footage of Genosha, which is just gone. Like it's just there's holes in the ground. And we go back to Genosha as we see survivors go to the center of this crater. Like we see Nightcrawler kind of crawl up and Rogue is holding Gambit and she's just like, she's finally touching him with her bare skin, right? And saying, I can't feel you. I can't feel you. And like, unbelievably, like the screen just goes black with her sobbing. Like it's fucking wildly emotional.
It's brutal.
It's so heart wrenching.
The credits are over sadder music.
Yes.
It's not, it doesn't
get
do the triumph.
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah, it doesn't,
dun,
it doesn't, yeah, get it doesn't cool.
do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. It is a jaw dropping, show stopping episode.
Just incredible. And it feels like it changes everything. Like it was at this point, I was like, oh, they can do anything that they want to. Like Marvel is just letting them do this stuff. That they're letting them kill fucking Gambit. Like anybody and anything can happen.
Well, it's also a really interesting choice for them to do Gambit because in terms of comic lineage, like Gambit has spent some of the least time dead. of any X-Men. Like, everybody gets a dead, you know, gets to hang out and be dead for a while.
That'd be a fun, somebody has probably done that graph, but that'd be a fun graph to put together as like, yeah, most time probably spent dead.
Yeah. There's probably a couple X-Men who have never died.
I'm sure.
But not very many, you know, like I'm trying to think like who hasn't died
that's been in an X-Men.
Maybe Kitty Pride. Well, maybe didn't die.
Just being trapped in like a cosmic bullet count as dying.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, they did think they thought she was dead during that.
Yeah.
That does, yeah. That, I don't know who hasn't died. You know, but it's everyone gets to be dead. Gambit has died before, but it was real brief.
What about Guy? Guido?
Strong guy hasn't died, but he hasn't been around long. Like he takes long periods of just being off camera.
He just hibernates. That doesn't really count.
Yeah, he goes into super slumber.
he goes to the X-Men camps upstate. Like just hangs out.
Main X-Men who have never died.
That's difficult, dude. I'm wrapping really my brain around this, trying to figure out.
Yeah. Beast just recently got. The current Beast got killed and replaced with a time-displaced Beast in the comics.
I feel
now.
Like that happens all the time, though. I feel like that's happened a bunch. Like
the, I think prior to that, Beast might have been, because he didn't die. He wouldn't join the Avengers for a long time.
Yeah.
And stuff. Iceman maybe hasn't died.
I was thinking Iceman. I was just thinking, because I don't know that he's actually died. He just retired, and then he came back, and then like he was...
He became an accountant for a while. Yeah.
One of my favorite facts about Iceman is he's just an accountant.
He fucking loves numbers.
Just I don't know. This is my calling. The fucking
definitely a decision they made for him before they decided to make him, you know, before he was sassy and gay.
Yeah.
Like
absolutely.
Current Iceman characterization does not seem like an accountant.
Fucking Colin Robinson of the X-Men. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Exactly.
I think Iceman might be it, dude. I don't know that Iceman has ever actually died in like mainline continuity.
Maybe Bishop too. Like he's a later X-Man, but maybe Bishop.
Of course, Bishop has like traveled through time so much. It's difficult.
He's been taken off the board for sure. But yeah, it's fucking tricky. But yeah, Gambit is one of the least dead X-Men.
That's right. That is 100% true. He is one of the least dead X-Men. I mean, this episode, like we poured sugar on it during the entire time we talked about it. So I don't have a lot of sugar to pour on it anymore, but like, it's just so fucking good. Like I think from tip to top, like my expectations for this show were so, so low that I, you know, I was just expecting it to be kind of, I don't know, kind of average at best, right? Like, just like, oh, they're going to write some X-Men stories. They, you know, they're going to maybe pick it up. But like, by the time we get here, like in the first four episodes were great. Don't get me wrong. Like I was like, holy shit, these are way better than I thought they would be. And then I saw this and I was like, this could be fucking anything. This could go a million different directions. Yeah. So.
Masterful work.
Yes, absolutely.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate you.
We do. If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can donate a couple bucks a month and get all kinds of cool benefits. Tons and tons of exclusive podcasts, access to the Slack server. You can call Gary on his personal cell phone. That's new. So that's a fun thing. Only between the hours of 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. Pacific time. But you can do it if you want
to. You can do it. Yeah, if you can find the number, you can do it. There are only so many combinations.
If you can solve Will's puzzle, if you can solve Will's ARG that he's probably running right now, you can definitely do that.
Yeah, there are ratings, reviews, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, tell your friends.
Yeah, do all that stuff.
Listen to all the other shows. You know the things.
Mm-hmm. Do all of them.
And we will see you with the next episode, Life Death Part 2.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.